Scottish Qualifications Authority, National Qualifications 2013. English for Speakers of Other Languages, Intermediate 2. Section A, Listening. Recording 1. Listen to the talk. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 1, before you hear the talk.
Hi, good morning. Let's all settle down. I must say you're all pretty lively for a Monday morning. It must be the nice weather. Now, before we start, there's a coach trip going to Hamilton's food factory next Wednesday afternoon. You'll get to see food technology in a real setting, so I'd advise you all to sign up for it. Right. Today I want to look at some of the legal aspects of food labelling. We're going to start with an area that has become more important in recent years, and that's the European Union's scheme to protect the origin of some types of food. There are three different grades, but the highest one is called Protected Designation of Origin, or PDO. Let's take a Scottish example. Arbroath Smokies. Now, some of you are from overseas, so just to clarify, Arbroath is a town on the east coast of Scotland, a few miles northeast of Dundee. And the smoky is a smoked fish, and one particular kind of fish, a haddock. Very tasty. They started in a village called Auchmithy, not far from Arbroath, then spread to Arbroath itself. Anyway, a few years ago, other manufacturers began using the name Arbroath Smokies for fish that were smoked elsewhere. So the traditional smoky makers applied to the European Union for PDO status, and that was granted in 2004. So now an Arbroath smoky has to be made in or around Arbroath. You can see this as a victory for small producers over the big companies, but sometimes the situation isn't that simple. Let's move south to Cornwall, in the far southwest of England. They make something called a Cornish pasty, which is a semi-circular pastry case filled with beef and vegetables. They have a thick edge where the pastry is folded over, and there's a story that goes with that. One of the traditional industries in Cornwall was mining, but not for coal, as was common in other parts of Britain, but for tin. Even the Romans came to Cornwall for its tin. Now, a problem with tin mines is that there are a lot of dangerous chemicals in the rocks, like arsenic, and the miners would get this on their hands. So, they would hold the pasties by the edge, eat the rest of it, and then throw that part away. Also, because the pastry was so thick, the pasty could stay warm for hours. Anyway, Cornish pasties soon became popular all over Britain, and after a long campaign, they were given protected status in 2011. This means that a Cornish pasty has to be made in Cornwall, though, strangely enough, it can be baked elsewhere. However, although there are many producers of Cornish pasties, and a lot of these can be small bakeries, the fact is that most of the pasties sold in Britain are made by one company, Ginsters. You can buy their products in any part of the country. So when the EU ruling came out, other national chains had to make some changes. Well, most of them did, but one company based in Devon, the next county to Cornwall, simply said that the EU could go to hell. They may have a point, since the oldest written reference to the pasty from 1510 comes from Plymouth, which is in Devon, not Cornwall. This was found in an old record book in 2006, and the story was picked up by the BBC and the newspapers and went round the world. Hi, good morning. Let's all settle down. I must say you're all pretty lively for a Monday morning. It must be the nice weather. Now, before we start, there's a coach trip going to Hamilton's Food Factory next Wednesday afternoon. You'll get to see food technology in a real setting, so I'd advise you all to sign up for it. Right. Today, I want to look at some of the legal aspects of food labelling. We're going to start with an area that has become more important in recent years, and that's the European Union's scheme to protect the origin of some types of food. There are three different grades, but the highest one is called Protected Designation of Origin, or PDO. Let's take a Scottish example. Arbroath Smokies. Now, some of you are from overseas, so just to clarify, Arbroath is a town on the east coast of Scotland, a few miles northeast of Dundee. And the smoky is a smoked fish, and one particular kind of fish, a haddock. Very tasty. They started in a village called Auchmithie, not far from Arbroath, then spread to Arbroath itself. Anyway, a few years ago, other manufacturers began using the name Arbroath Smokies for fish that were smoked elsewhere. So the traditional smoky makers applied to the European Union for PDO status, and that was granted in 2004. So now an Arbroath smoky has to be made in or around Arbroath. You can see this as a victory for small producers over the big companies, but sometimes the situation isn't that simple. Let's move south, to Cornwall, in the far southwest of England. They make something called a Cornish pasty, which is a semi-circular pastry case filled with beef and vegetables. They have a thick edge where the pastry is folded over, and there's a story that goes with that. One of the traditional industries in Cornwall was mining, but not for coal, as was common in other parts of Britain, but for tin. Even the Romans came to Cornwall for its tin. Now, a problem with tin mines is that there are a lot of dangerous chemicals in the rocks, like arsenic, and the miners would get this on their hands. So, they would hold the pasties by the edge, eat the rest of it, and then throw that part away. Also, because the pastry was so thick, the pasty could stay warm for hours. Anyway, Cornish pasties soon became popular all over Britain, and after a long campaign, they were given protected status in 2011. This means that a Cornish pasty has to be made in Cornwall, though, strangely enough, it can be baked elsewhere. However, although there are many producers of Cornish pasties, and a lot of these can be small bakeries, the fact is that most of the pasties sold in Britain are made by one company, Ginsters. You can buy their products in any part of the country. So when the EU ruling came out, other national chains had to make some changes. Well, most of them did, but one company based in Devon, the next county to Cornwall, simply said that the EU could go to hell. They may have a point, since the oldest written reference to the pasty from 1510 comes from Plymouth, which is in Devon, not Cornwall. This was found in an old record book in 2006, and the story was picked up by the BBC and the newspapers and went round the world.
Recording 2. Listen to the conversation between a couple, Claire and Roddy, and an old school friend of Claire's. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 2, before you hear the conversation.
Claire!
Jim! Jimmy Mack!
That's me. How are you?
I'm fine. This is Roddy.
Roddy, hi!
Nice to meet you, Jim.
Sit down, sit down. Sorry it's so crowded, but everywhere's like this during the festival. What do you want to drink? Claire?
Oh, a Diet Coke?
Okay. And you, Roddy?
Same for me, Jim.
Okay, back in a minute.
This is weird. It's been about 15 years. Mind you, he hasn't changed a lot. Put on a bit of weight, maybe. But much the same. We were only 17 when we last saw each other. And he left before we finished school. In fifth year after the exams. You don't look so happy.
No. But it's strange. You two meeting through the internet after all this time. Maybe I shouldn't be
here. Oh, don't be silly. We were just friends. Not even close friends.
Are you sure?
Here we are, two Diet Cokes. Back in a minute, I'll just get my drink.
Interesting place, this. Not the poshest pub I've been in. It's quite basic, really. I wonder why he picked it.
Probably lives round the corner.
Well, cheers.
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 So, Claire, how are you? What have you been up to?
Well, after school, I went to university. I did accountancy. Then I joined a firm here in Edinburgh, and after a couple of years, they sent me to Brussels.
Claire was head of the Brussels office of one of the biggest UK firms. So it was only a matter of time before I met her.
Interesting. So, you're in the same line of work?
I'm in finance, yes.
What Roddy means is he's a banker. Was a banker.
Was?
Go ahead and tell him the whole story.
Look, if you'd rather not.
Well, let me tell it. We got married, then Claire got pregnant.
You've got a kid. Great.
A girl. She's 3 now.
So then I was offered a job in Glasgow, and it seemed like a good idea.
So you both moved back to Scotland?
Yes. But unfortunately, the recession hit Roddy's firm badly, and he lost his job. I was 6 months pregnant. Not a good time.
But you're back on your feet now. I mean, you both look...
Sure. Roddy got another job. It's not banking, but it's... okay.
Yes.
So, Jim, what did you do after school? Did you go to university?
No. I went to London for a while. Tried various things. Then I went to drama school.
So, you're an actor?
No. I was never very interested in acting as such. More in directing.
I see. And have you directed anything since you left?
Oh, yes, lots of things. For a while. But I wasn't very good at it.
That's a shame. So, what do you do?
Well, I decided to have a go at producing, and it worked out quite well. I've got a show on here in Edinburgh.
Wait a minute. Jim? Jimmy Mack? McIntyre, wasn't it? James McIntyre? You're not that James McIntyre, the producer.
Well, yes.
So you're producing that show across the road in the Festival Theatre?
Yes, that's right.
We were going to go and see it, but the reviews were, how shall I say, mixed?
Yes, the critics don't seem to like it, and they may be right. Though, oddly enough, that doesn't stop lots of people buying tickets, and I can live with that. Now, tell me where you're living these days. Claire!
Jim! Jimmy Mack!
That's me. How are you?
I'm fine. This is Roddy.
Roddy, hi.
Nice to meet you, Jim.
Sit down, sit down. Sorry it's so crowded, but everywhere's like this during the festival. What do you want to drink? Claire?
Oh, a Diet Coke.
Okay. And you, Roddy?
Same for me, Jim.
Okay. Back in a minute.
This is weird. It's been about 15 years. Mind you, he hasn't changed a lot. Put on a bit of weight, maybe. But much the same. We were only 17 when we last saw each other. And he left before we finished school. In fifth year after the exams. You don't look so happy.
No. But it's strange. You two meeting through the internet after all this time. Maybe I shouldn't be here.
Oh, don't be silly. We were just friends. Not even close friends.
Are you sure?
Here we are, two Diet Cokes. Back in a minute, I'll just get my drink.
Interesting place, this. Not the poshest pub I've been in. It's quite basic, really. I wonder why he picked it.
Probably lives around the corner.
Well, cheers.
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 So, Claire, how are you? What have you been up to?
Well, after school, I went to university. I did accountancy. Then I joined a firm here in Edinburgh, and after a couple of years, they sent me to Brussels.
Claire was head of the Brussels office of one of the biggest UK firms, so it was only a matter of time before I met her.
Interesting. So, you're in the same line of work?
I'm in finance, yes.
What Roddy means is he's a banker. Was a banker.
Was?
Go ahead and tell him the whole story.
Look, if you'd rather not.
Well, let me tell it. We got married, then Claire got pregnant.
You've got a kid. Great.
A girl. She's 3 now.
So then I was offered a job in Glasgow, and it seemed like a good idea.
So you both moved back to Scotland?
Yes. But unfortunately, the recession hit Roddy's firm badly, and he lost his job. I was 6 months pregnant. Not a good time.
But you're back on your feet now. I mean, you both look...
Sure. Roddy got another job. It's not banking, but it's... okay.
Yes.
So, Jim, what did you do after school? Did you go to university?
No. I went to London for a while. Tried various things. Then I went to drama school.
So, you're an actor?
No. I was never very interested in acting as such. More in directing.
I see. And have you directed anything since you left?
Oh, yes, lots of things. For a while. But I wasn't very good at it.
That's a shame. So, what do you do?
Well, I decided to have a go at producing, and it worked out quite well. I've got a show on here in Edinburgh.
Wait a minute. Jim? Jimmy Mack? McIntyre, wasn't it? James McIntyre? You're not that James McIntyre, the producer.
Well, yes.
So you're producing that show across the road in the Festival Theatre?
Yes, that's right.
We were going to go and see it, but the reviews were... how shall I say? Mixed?
Yes, the critics don't seem to like it, and they may be right. Though, oddly enough, that doesn't stop lots of people buying tickets, and I can live with that. Now, tell me where you're living these days.
Recording 3. Listen to the news report. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 3, before you hear the news report.
The super dry generation. Everyone from Justin Bieber to Kate Winslet wears it, and sales are booming. But how did an unremarkable UK label become a hit high street brand? Imogen Fox reports.
In London, you're never meant to be more than 6 feet away from a rat, even if you can't see one. Today, in the UK, by my reckoning, you're never more than 6 feet away from a bit of super dry. You know the clothes, even if you think you don't. Look around. On the bus, someone's carrying a rucksack with Japanese writing. On a rush hour train, several suits will be wearing a lightweight jacket with too many zips. Your barista is wearing a t-shirt with a huge number printed on it. It looks familiar, but doesn't seem to mean anything. These are all super dry clothes. Unisex, yet anonymous. This week, Supergroup, the company that owns streetwear label Superdry, has, yet again, proved itself the indestructible superhero on the high street. On Wednesday, the retailer reported sales up 40%, and its pre-tax profits stand at £50 million. At a time when the British public have lost their taste for sugary continental chocolates and designer bedside lamps, the appetite for discreetly logoed clothes is growing daily. Superdry buff Dave Elliott enthused, "Everything is bold and modern, but without being expensive. I really like the style and colours." And, he claims, it's a more affordable alternative to expensive designer labels. Yet the quality of the product is great. He makes sure that he visits the store at least once a week to see what's new. Superdry was set up in 2003 by Julian Dunkerton, who already owned a brand named Cult Clothing, selling vintage clothes and logo t-shirts to students. Since then, the label has consistently outperformed the competition. It added 18 UK stores last year, taking the total to 60. A further 44 franchise stores were opened abroad in the same period, taking that total to 80. It is the label most likely to be worn by a papped celebrity carrying a Starbucks. Superdry has been described as a modern sartorial phenomenon. The appeal of Superdry is hard to explain, in some part owing to the broadness of its reach. It can't be put into a neat fashion category, as other high street labels can. Zara is catwalk trends on the cheap, while COS is just the right side of plain for fashion nerds. It's sporty in a way that appeals to people who like the idea of snowboarding, but who don't actually go. It occupies the same territory as Uniqlo and All Saints, and yet it trounces them. It's an easy formula to pick apart, but it's hard to blend the ingredients. If it were, its peers would surely emulate it stitch for stitch. City financiers are equally puzzled by the brand's success. One of them said that it was hard to believe how the company had remained so fashionable for so long. But it hardly seems to matter how the label is pulling this fashion trick off. The fact remains that it is.
The Super Dry Generation. Everyone from Justin Bieber to Kate Winslet wears it, and sales are booming. But how did an unremarkable UK label become a hit high street brand? Imogen Fox reports.
In London, you're never meant to be more than 6 feet away from a rat, even if you can't see one. Today, in the UK, by my reckoning, you're never more than 6 feet away from a bit of Super Dry. You know the clothes, even if you think you don't. Look around. On the bus, someone's carrying a rucksack with Japanese writing. On a rush hour train, several suits will be wearing a lightweight jacket with too many zips. Your barista is wearing a t-shirt with a huge number printed on it. It looks familiar, but doesn't seem to mean anything. These are all Super Dry clothes. Unisex, yet anonymous. This week, Supergroup, the company that owns streetwear label Super Dry, has, yet again, proved itself the indestructible superhero on the high street. On Wednesday, the retailer reported sales up 40%, and its pre-tax profits stand at £50 million. At a time when the British public have lost their taste for sugary continental chocolates and designer bedside lamps, the appetite for discreetly logoed clothes is growing daily. Superdry buff Dave Elliott enthused, "Everything is bold and modern, but without being expensive. I really like the style and colours." And, he claims, it's a more affordable alternative to expensive designer labels. Yet the quality of the product is great. He makes sure that he visits the store at least once a week to see what's new. Superdry was set up in 2003 by Julian Dunkerton, who already owned a brand named Cult Clothing, selling vintage clothes and logo t-shirts to students. Since then, the label has consistently outperformed the competition. It added 18 UK stores last year, taking the total to 60. A further 44 franchise stores were opened abroad in the same period, taking that total to 80. It is the label most likely to be worn by a papped celebrity carrying a Starbucks. Superdry has been described as a modern sartorial phenomenon. The appeal of Superdry is hard to explain, in some part owing to the broadness of its reach. It can't be put into a neat fashion category, as other high street labels can. Zara is catwalk trends on the cheap, while COS is just the right side of plain for fashion nerds. It's sporty in a way that appeals to people who like the idea of snowboarding, but who don't actually go. It occupies the same territory as Uniqlo and All Saints, and yet it trounces them. It's an easy formula to pick apart, but it's hard to blend the ingredients. If it were, its peers would surely emulate it, stitch for stitch. City financiers are equally puzzled by the brand's success. One of them said that it was hard to believe how the company had remained so fashionable for so long. But it hardly seems to matter how the label is pulling this fashion trick off. The fact remains that it is.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.